Well, we're late on everything today, but I've been talking to a few folks, and so, hey, good times. But it's amazing when you cut out, you know, five or six songs and still end up saying, oh, how did we go that late? Maybe I talked too long, but it was good stuff. You know, I was excited for that sermon because I had, when I was kind of plotting out, sketching out what this sermon series would look like, I had just kind of written down a bunch of verses, you know, or sections where it's like, okay, well, these I think are pivotal moments in what the Sabbath, you know, how it shaped up or formed into what it is. And I was looking at those and thinking, you know, okay, where do they all go in order? And you know, there's too many to fit into a 3 weeks, you know, series or study. So I'm looking at all that and I'm like, okay, well, I get into it and you know, looking at the, you know, the Isaiah 58 one, and the more I read that and studied it, the more I was really kind of impressed with just how much that chapter, just the more I got into it, I was really impressed by it. And I'll be honest, I really like the part where he says, don't send the finger to anyone, you know, because what I like to do is give somebody a thumbs up when they're in traffic. I did this to somebody yesterday, you know, they were driving behind us with their brights on, and so I found a little turning lane where I pulled over and then I got in behind him, and I wasn't angry, I just kind of clicked the lights at him a couple times, like, hey, you were blinding me, just letting you know, like, I didn't have a spotlight like my brother used to do where he'd shine it out the back window to blind him, you know, from the front. He had some road rage issues. But anyway, you know, and so they didn't get the message. They didn't adjust their high beams and kept driving for miles. And so when we got back into Zephyr Hills, we're coming up to 301, and we got in the straight through lane, and they were in the turn lane. And I just went, you know, you're doing great. And I feel like, you know, how do you take a thumbs up the wrong way? You know, it's clearly a thumb. It's not flipping them a bird. And yet it's like so much better, actually, because it's so mocking, you know, like, you're doing great, you know. And then it's kind of like God saying, what did you mean by that? And it's like, okay, you know. So I don't know what Isaiah meant when he says, don't send the finger. Because it probably means some kind of pointing and judging, or it might even be saying, like, go and do the work that I sent you to do, you know, on the Sabbath day. Or in context, that's probably what it means. But it also is talking about brawling and fighting. And so he's kind of like, hey, you know, like, if you're gonna be brawling and fighting and flipping each other off, don't come work on the don't stop working on the Sabbath day and act as if you're somehow righteous and holy or doing what God wants. If you're going to do those things on Monday or whatever day, don't act like the Sabbath is a special day. Because clearly you didn't learn anything on your Sabbath day of rest. When I was trying to commune with you, you know, this is God. When God was trying to commune with you and speak to you and teach you and humble you, instead, all you're doing is indulging in selfish pleasures and desires and pursuits, and then going and abusing workers or other people. You know, like, don't act like the Sabbath day was anything special if that's how you're going to live on the other days. Does that make sense? Okay. If I didn't have a time clock in my head, I probably would have explained that just a little bit more, but by the time I got even to, like, the Isaiah part, which is right here, by the time I got to that part of my notes, it was already 11:04, so I said, I gotta work on this. So we kind of shortened some of the other stuff, which I plan on that part taking it a little extra time, but, like, I kind of went deep into the Moses and the stick and all that stuff, and so it's like, okay, got to trim some stuff out of here because these people are eventually going to want to stand up and get the blood flowing again. So anyway, so that's some of my kind of closing thoughts on where we were at with Isaiah 58 and all that. What kinds of thoughts or comments, disagreements, or questions do you perchance have on what we talked about today? Or on anything Sabbath related for that matter?
See, when you said, don't curl your fingers.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. Got a lot of blame going on there.
What about me?
Yeah. What else?
Well,
Ah, yeah. Right? Well, it's like, where do forest rangers go to get away from it all? You know, that old joke. Yeah, what do they do in the desert, he said, you know, for relaxation? But the Sabbath is more, so much more than relaxation, right? I mean, it's ceasing, it's not just ceasing work or ceasing to expend energy, it's to stop working to provide and to stop working to take care of your physical needs. Really what God's saying is like, well, like on the seventh day of creation, God rested from that. He stopped doing anything. In other words, what he was essentially saying, what I have done up until this day is good enough. Like, in fact, he said, it's not just good enough, it's very good, right? Like, on several days, God said, and it says, God saw that it was good. God saw that it was good. And I think on the sixth day, I want to say that he said, and God saw that it was very good. So in other words, on the last day of his creating work, he said, this is very good. And I'll tell you, sometimes I'll finish a job, a home project of some kind, and I'll look at it and say, that's good enough. Or actually, oh, Amy's laughing that I finished the job. Is that what the joke was for you? Is that the funny part? I'm the king of 90% is what it boils down to. Like, that's good enough, right? Like, that's almost done, you know? Like, that's 90% finished. We'll just kind of leave it at that. 95 sometimes. My sister's like an 80 or 85% finisher, you know? Like, I would give her a hard time when we go up to visit her in Tennessee, and she had painted, like, a wall except for the top part because she didn't want to get out the ladder, you know, and cut the trim in. I'm like, I like that two-tone wall you've got, you know? That's like, that's almost done, just not quite. And it went for a long time, just like that, you know. And I was glad to see the last time we saw her that she had finished painting that wall and gave up on housekeeping. But anyway, well, granted, she has at least four more cats that she didn't have before, so that's a lot more work to take care of them, I'm sure. But anyway, I can say these things because she's not here and she probably won't listen to this, so there. Because we will probably post this online later, if it's any good. We'll see. But anyway, I'm the king of 90, 95%. But I'll say that's good enough. Or, Kendall, what do we say? Can't see it. Can't see it from my house, you know, if it's for someone else. Looks good from where I sleep, you know, like I'll sleep just fine. And yet, you know, God, when he saw the end of his labors, he said, this is very, very good. I mean, God is a master craftsman when it comes down to it. You know, he takes pride in his work. And what that means is, I don't know, could he have done it better? It feels almost insulting to say, probably not. But it's easy for any craftsman to look at something that they have produced and say, ah, I could have done it just a little bit better if I had that tool. I mean, that's what guys are always saying. Like, I need another tool. I could have done it better with a better tool. And then I hear my dad saying, you know, all those times, it's a poor craftsman that blames his tools. And I'm like, well, if your tools are crappy, then you're going to turn out some pretty bad work. But whatever. Anyway, God didn't have to go through that. He looks at his work and says, it's very, very good. And now I can rest. He didn't have to look at it and say, and then on Monday, I'll have to fix all this stuff and do all this. He just said, I can rest. Now, if God can rest from the labor of creating the universe and the world and environment in which we live, then perhaps we're able to cease from our labors, not just for relaxation, but to say, that is truly very good. That is good enough. Not just king of 90% good enough, but as 100% finished, that is good enough for this. And I'm going to rest and trust, just like with the manna, I'm going to trust that God will continue providing for me and my family and my household while I stop. That's really what why the manna became such a key moment in Sabbath rest, let's say theology. The theology of Sabbath rest is clearly played out or defined in the giving of manna in the wilderness, because they could not keep it for the seventh day, or they cannot keep extra each day, but they had to keep it on the seventh day because God had provided enough to do that. We didn't get into it. I don't know. Maybe we talked about it last week or talked about it sometime recently, where the I think I talked about it last week. The year of Sabbath rest for the land, where they would not plant the crops on the Sabbath year, the seventh year. It's the same idea, that on the sixth year, God would provide enough crops for them to eat them the sixth year, the seventh year, and then the eighth year, until that eighth year harvest had come to harvest time and was ready to be consumed. And so God is showing them both on the weekly and on the seven-year cycle that he's going to provide for them in that time of resting. Now, I recognize those of you who are retired or on disability or something like that, you don't have a 5, 6, or 7-day work cycle. But that doesn't mean you're exempt from the idea of resting on the Sabbath. The Sabbath for us becomes a day where you say, okay, I'm going to stop doing the things that, how would I put it? The things that are the routine of keeping life going. I'm not saying, hey, don't take your medication or do exercise or this or that. That's not what I mean by that. What it means is, that's a day where you're like, you know what? I don't have to create a list of errands or these things around the house that I'm looking at that need to be done. In fact, one of the hardest things for some of us to do is to rest and then look around at the cobwebs in the corner or the light bulb that needs to be changed or the painting that didn't get finished, you know, the cutting in. Whatever it might be, you know, those list of things that are nagging you in the back of your mind or from your spouse's lips. And sorry, I just couldn't help it. Listen, if I say I'm going to do it, you don't have to remind me every 6 months. I'll do it, okay? I love that joke. I'll repeat it for those who didn't hear. No, just kidding. If I say I'm going to finish it, you don't have to nag me every 6 months about it. I'll get it done. So anyway, it's such a good joke. The other one is the shirt that Amy found for me that says, I just need a couple more days. You know, like, I just need a couple more days on this project. It's taking longer than I planned. I just need a couple more days. So anyway, the idea is saying, you know, we see all these things that need to be done and we think, my mind can't rest until that task gets completed. Actually, no. God is trying to teach you even then to push those things out and to say, that is not my focus today. My focus isn't on the list of things, the task list, the honey-do list, the things that need to get done or accomplished. My focus today is perhaps rest and relaxation, but that might also be taking a walk, getting exercise, going on a hike, or whatever it might be. For me, it's like loading the kayak up in the truck and going up to the river. You know, things like that, which, you know, you might say, well, it's a lot of work to get that thing into the truck. Like, yeah, it is, but man, it's so worth it, you know, because yes, I'm going to be exerting. I'm going to get sweaty and tired out there, but I'm going to enjoy that time out there with God in the nature that he created. And so it's exertion, but it's not work. It is resting. It is relaxing. But then also when we see in the Isaiah 58, he says the kind of fast that he looks for is to actually loosen the bonds that are upon people. The kind of fasting that God wants is to take care of those who need the help or the assistance. Now, the sad thing is a lot of people in our world today have taken things like that under the title of social justice. And I hate social justice. I don't hate the outcome or what gets done for people. And if you don't know what I mean by social justice, it's this idea of looking at the needs of society, the social needs that people have, and trying to figure out how to fix them or take care of them. And the problem is, it's so possible to do that apart from a godly love or a conviction that this is how we should be taking care of the people that God has created. In other words, social justice people, or sometimes in a mocking sense, we call them social justice warriors. You've seen this type. If there's a need, a cause out there, they're like, yeah! And they'll get the t-shirt, put on the bumper sticker, post it on their Facebook page. They're like, look what I'm out here doing, you know? I saw one that was a picture of these girls, you know, they were like these models almost looking chicks, and they're out there collecting a bag of trash out on the beach. They're like, look what I cleaned up. and then somebody else was recording it, like that wasn't part of their group. And once they finished recording for what they were doing, the girl just kind of looked angry, left the bag of trash there, and walked off. It was literally just for the gram, they call it. She just posted it for the gram, just for the followers on Instagram. And somebody else was recording it saying, what a lie. And so, you know, social justice can be such a misnomer out there. The kind of justice God cares about is setting right his creation. The things that have been messed up by sin, he wants us to set them right again, to reset them or correct them. Because that's the ultimate goal that God is going towards with the new heavens and the new earth, where he doesn't wipe out what's here, but he cleanses it as with fire, like a refiner's fire, burns up everything that doesn't belong, just like they do when we have controlled burns in our forests around here to get rid of the invasive species of plant matter and get rid of them, enrich the soil from their ashes so that the species of trees and plants that belong here can grow better and stronger out of what was there. And so what God is going to do one day is to redeem and restore this place that he has created, and it was very, very good. It has been destroyed by sin for a time, but God has not forgotten about it. And he will one day bring redemption and restoration to it. And so when he talks about what we do on the Sabbath, and when he talks about how we can truly live out the things he's saying in Isaiah 58, the kind of fasting that he actually desires from us, is to push aside that type of bondage that sin has created and to bring in or usher in glimpses of what his kingdom looks like. Man, I'm preaching again. I hadn't even planned on saying all this. It's coming together. This is why I record this, so I can be like, I really needed to hear what I said. You know, like I said some good stuff and I was learning from it as I was saying it. And you're thinking, Pastor, does that happen? I'm like, more than you know. But I'm learning from this as I'm saying it. I'm like, okay, it's all coming together. I see the big picture of what this looks like. This is God's idea of the Sabbath. This is God's idea of what Sabbath rest looks like, is restoration of his creation for that which he intended it. All right. How did that sound? What next? Ed, you got something going on in there. I can see it. Okay. So Jesus talked a lot about, what things were permissible on the Sabbath, right? Like he said, when they accused his disciples of breaking the Sabbath by taking heads of grain from the fields as they were walking and rubbing it off, getting the chaff out of there, and eating the grain like for a snack because they were hangry. They hadn't had lunch or breakfast or something. They had just been, they had just been in at a Sabbath service at a synagogue. So essentially they were, in modern parlance, they were at church. They left church and got a snack on the way wherever home was at that point, wherever Jesus was staying. And they were hungry, and that's what they were doing. You're fine. Okay. You're good. No worries. Oh, okay, good. You're fine. No apologies. Jesus, when he's questioned on that, and he tells a story about David getting the bread from the priest from the house of the Lord and giving it to his companions, Jesus says, the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. In other words, this is God's gift to you. And the Sabbath was made for you. Thinking through that. So Jesus said other things about the Sabbath. when he was questioned on it. Like, you know, he healed a man's hand on the Sabbath, right? The man's hand was shriveled or withered, and he says, stretch out your hand, and the guy does, and it's healed. And the ruler of the synagogue says, hey, guys, there's 6 other days during the week to come and get healed, so come on one of those days. And Jesus says, if you have an animal that falls into a well, which, by the way, shouldn't happen because the law said there's supposed to be a ledge or a parapet around the well, just like there's supposed to be around a flat roof so that nobody falls over it or falls into it. You know, that Jessica thing in Texas wouldn't have been a problem if there was a ledge. Sorry, that's an old... Remember the girl that fell down the well? She doesn't remember it, by the way. I looked that up just recently. She was too young. She had no memory. And so Jesus, he says, if your animal falls into the well on the Sabbath, you're going to reach in and pull it out. There was a Sabbath provision for saving life. So like modern Jews that are trying to observe the law of God in a modern context today, they have limits on the things that they can do on the Sabbath, but if it preserves or saves life, they're allowed to do it. So for instance, a Jewish doctor isn't supposed to go into work to perform his medical responsibilities on the Sabbath day. However, if there's somebody that needs, like, let's say, emergency medication or emergency work, they're allowed to break the Sabbath in order to save life. And so Jesus is saying eating a meal is kind of like saving a life. Especially if you've got like blood sugar issues, you're diabetic, and you're like, I have to maintain a certain sugar level. So, you know, I need food. And if I'm out driving home and I feel like I'm going to pass out and I pull into a convenience store and buy an orange juice, did I make somebody work on the Sabbath? Well, I mean, they were already there, but okay, fine. Like, if we're being super legalistic, yeah, your necessity made them work. But did that save a life? Yeah. And Jesus would say, it wasn't meant for you to look at it legalistically. It was meant for you to look at it and say, is the Sabbath being a blessing to me today? And on the Sabbath, am I so focused on my joy in the Lord and then turning around and abusing other people? Whether it's your workers or if you're somebody's boss, your underlings or a neighbor or somebody that's driving with their brights behind you and you want to, use my thumb, you know, like, don't send the finger, as it said, you know, in the verse. You know, whatever it is, God is saying, like, use the Sabbath to be a blessing to others, to make the world a better place. Start with you, work outward from there. I don't know if that directly answers the question you had.
It does. I have one other thought.
Yeah.
I'm trying to relate it in here about Jesus talking about not coming to abolish the law. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to relate that over to the Sabbath and say what he was saying by either healing or eating or any other things on the Sabbath was that in a sense he was giving direction on how to fulfill the law that's already there.
Right. Right. Okay, yeah. Yeah, I think you're on to it there. I mean, when Jesus said he came to not abolish the law, but to fulfill it, he's showing how he in himself is the fulfillment of the law. In fact, we'll see next week or the week after if I extend it 1 week. We were supposed to only go 3 weeks. I'm toying with a fourth one on the Sabbath. But Jesus, we learn, is the Sabbath rest that we were looking for. In other words, our full rest is found in Christ. And so, I mean, that's a lot to get into, and I'm not fully studied on that part yet. It's like 1 week at a time here. But we are headed that way in our study, and I don't know if it's next week or the following one. But since both the Sabbath and the laws and all the other laws and commands were fulfilled in Christ, then then what we recognize is we have to both look at the laws, you know, the Jewish laws were not under that covenant that they were, and yet Jesus said, I didn't come to undo them, but to fulfill them. So we have to interpret them both as Jesus interpreted them and in light of his ministry, his sacrifice of himself, and his death and resurrection. We have to interpret the Old Testament laws as he interpreted them, or in light of how he lived. It, for instance, if there was a law that he didn't directly talk about or interpret. That's how we approach those. So anyway, that's a longer discussion, and I'll kind of cut it off there, and I'd be happy to talk with you another time about it. Any last minute thoughts on anybody before we, yeah, Joe.
Yes, didn't talk about the interpretation of the law.
Yeah.
There's one denomination that teaches it a little bit different to how clarified it, eating the grain and stuff
yeah.
like that. That says, you're not a, on the Sabbath, you're not allowed to do any unnecessary or servile work.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Like you mentioned with the doctors.
Yeah.
You know, and that denomination preaches that. You know,
yeah.
And apparently you must be all right in that denomination to do that.
Well, and anybody that's ever had a, you know, an emergency surgery, you know, you didn't get to plan when that happened, you know, or had to call an ambulance or a police officer or something like that. You didn't get to plan what day that occurred on. Thank God that that surgeon or somebody wasn't, or that cop wasn't legalistic about the Sabbath day if you had to call him on a Sabbath day.
But, you know, they work 7 days a week.
Yeah.
Emergency.
That's true. And so, you know, if you're on one of those crews, even if you're, let's say, you know, we get these hurricanes here, right? And we see those teams of trucks from a power company or tree trimmers or whatever, and they're coming down. And, you know, I think in a situation like that, that's the extreme or the rare rather than the common, you know, that doesn't happen all the time. When something like that happens, I'm pretty sure God isn't saying, oh boy, you guys need to sit in a hotel for 24 hours. You know, you're on the road from out of state, but you got to sit in the hotel on the Sabbath day and not cut up any trees and fix any power lines. How many people are sitting there potentially in need of that electricity for whether they're on an oxygen tank or they're just susceptible to the heat or whatever it might be? People need that power. We're used to living with it. I know there was a time when humans didn't. There's also a time when humans lived for like 40 years, you know? So like, you know, with those increases in life, there's, you know, there's these technological things that have helped it. And I don't think God's going to say, okay, make sure you take a day off, you know? No, I think he's going to allow them to do that work. But man, when you get home, when the storm's cleaned up and the power lines are strung back on their poles, like, you know, get back to finding some rest. Maybe taking a few days off to make up for the days that you didn't rest while you're out of town. Good point. Thank you for that. All right, guys. Appreciate y'all. I'm always happy to stay and talk. And if you guys got to go home or go somewhere else, have at it.